Librarian, welcome to Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. My name is Jay.
My name is Matt.
And I'm just, can I just have the 5 million?
And welcome to the show. How's everybody doing?
I'm ecstatic. I'm an island in the stream.
There's definitely vibes of leftovers in this show, and the opening to this episode definitely smacked of leftovers for me.
Oh, it was definitely leftovers.
What about you, Matt? Did you get that feeling?
I don't know if I got the leftovers vibe, but I definitely got that Lost vibe at the very, very end.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, not to jump, but we do jump around.
Spoiler alert, yes, we do. But yes, we had a man who was in a wheelchair be able to stand up and walk.
Walk?
You just ruined this podcast for me. Thanks, Matt.
On episode 4, no less, right? Because Walkabout was 3 or 4, depending if you count the pilot as 2 episodes or not. But, it's classic Lindelof where there's a lot of answers, but then there's a lot more questions. And this one definitely felt like introducing new characters, plus a bit of setup, but really not a whole lot of big movement in the story. But what did you guys think?
I like the part that said, if you don't like my story, write your own.
Yes, the title, yes.
I thought that was hilarious. I did laugh out loud.
And when they did the title, they kind of struck out the word, or there was a line through the words, my story, right? So it would read, if you don't like your own, which is kind of an interesting like play on the, if you don't like my story, write your own. That line is also a quote from the book that Cal is reading later in the episode. He's reading Things Fall Apart. And before we begin podcasting, that was the one thing that I was kind of researching a little bit about that book, about that story. I wish I could say that I've read it, but I have not.
Matt, you couldn't read that in the 10 minutes between when the episode ended and we were getting ready to record the show.
You need to take the Evelyn Woods School of Speed Reading.
No kidding. I did read the Wikipedia synopsis, and I recommend for any listeners that want to know more, because I feel like I would butcher even just trying to paraphrase what happens in the story. There is some interesting things, though, and Angela kind of hints at one of the biggest things is that the main character hangs himself in the end to avoid being tried in a colonial court. So I guess the reference there of the hanging kind of coming back into this book that is definitely referenced. There's some other kind of, you know, loose connections that you could make, I think, to some of the things that are going in Watchmen. So again, for listeners that want to know more, I would check that out. The book also, if you're familiar with the Roots, they named their album Things Fall Apart after this book. So it's got a lot of, it's a very famous book. So
the one you didn't read?
The one I did not read. I blame my educational upbringing. So
okay,
yeah, I blame mine as well.
You're 47. You've had plenty of time to read the book.
My father. Fake news.
My father wasn't a big reader. He mainly read the funnies in the newspaper, as he called them.
The funnies. I never called them the funnies. The funny papers.
Who said it was?
Was I the godfather?
But nice book lesson there, Matt. With Lost, we used to have book clubs, and people would like read the book and kind of dissect it and stuff like that. So again, it's cool that the hallmark or a touchstone of a Damon Lindelof show is reference to other art, whether that's actual art or written story. And it's good to kind of see that continue on here on this show, which he didn't really dig too much into the leftovers, if I remember correctly, save for that article about Egypt, but in National
Geographic.
National Geographic.
Yes.
But still, thank you, Matt, for doing that research. And
thank you, Matt, for almost reading the book.
I was honestly, I was trying to figure out what Ma Clark was reading there at the very beginning. I could not read the book, so I don't know. I guess by next week I'll find out in the Easter eggs.
I thought it was green eggs and ham.
Well, before we get into any more stuff, let's take a quick moment to thank people that make this show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. The Watchmen podcast and all of the other ones on the Jay and Jack Network are listener-supported. That means whether our listeners contribute $1 or more a month, all of that goes to support our podcasters, hosting fees, websites, all of that kind of stuff, all of the team members that help support the production of these shows. All of that comes from listener support just like you. So if you'd like to donate today, head over to jayandjack.com and click on the Become a Patron link. All right, gentlemen. This one does start off with, you know, this kind of little quaint farming story between a couple, childless couple. And we were introduced to, was it Miss True?
Yes.
Lady True.
Lady True.
Can I ask a question?
A very interesting proposal.
Can I ask just one question?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have Mrs. Clark sitting out there with all her eggs. One car goes by, and then she gives up?
Well, maybe that was like, you know, she was out there for 7 hours or something.
Is there only one car that coming down that road?
I mean, it is up? Oklahoma.
He didn't want the eggs. I guess I got to go and break them.
Yeah, I mean, again, she knows her market, and
I'm not questioning. Well, I guess I am questioning.
Yeah, you are kind of questioning it.
Just seemed like a quitter, but you know.
But anyway, thoughts here on this opening sequence, because it's kind of very intense and kind of crazy. You know, she genetically made a son for them, plus giving $5 million, yeah. Which I thought was a little low, honestly, of an offer. I'd be like, how about $10 million? But you know, that
kids are expensive, especially exactly. when you're not selling eggs.
I think you'd run out by the time they're like 16. I'm not sure. Anyway,
I thought there was an interesting connection where she talks about blood equals legacy, and immediately I was thinking about before we were even introduced to it, but the whole idea of Angela's blood being connected to Williams and this idea of legacy, you know, and what travels through the DNA or you know, what have you. So,
well, to quote Hamilton, legacy is planting seeds in a garden you'll never get to see. Anyway, but it seems like this whole thing was a play just to own these 40 acres for this meteor or whatever it was that fell on that property, right? So the question that I have is, what's that meteor?
It's definitely Superman. I mean, it's in the name, Clark's. You know?
That's true.
Oh, good call, Matt.
That's true.
God, nice job.
That's just what it reminded me of. You know, you got this farm couple, they're adopting a kid, and then you got a meteor crash. It's all right there.
Why was the dad so anxious to have the baby opposed to the mom?
It's a son.
Okay, but she know it was that they know it was a son at first?
Yeah, she said it was.
Okay, all right, because he was like gung ho, and she maybe because she didn't carry the baby.
Maybe, or maybe she's just the more.
I'm just saying she just felt more standoffish about the deal until the $5 million kicked in.
Well. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter the sex. Generally, out of a couple, and sometimes in both people, but one of them is the more sensible. Maybe one of them's the more emotional. Maybe in this situation, it's you know, the husband's not a quick thinker and under pressure and just kind of quickly makes impulsive decisions. And you know, Mrs. Clark, she's the one that's like, hold on, this is too good to be true. This is making a deal with the devil here. So I think, you know, she's just being a sensible person, because I think there is, you know, a little bit of F you, get off my property. Like, who the hell are you?
Well, could she have got the deal done with just the $5 million?
Are they telling
us that these baby, this baby being made, maybe being the reason why we see other babies later on. Maybe it's, sure. maybe there's a connection there. Maybe that's why they had the baby in this whole deal in the first place.
No, I mean, I think it honestly was trying to like make the deal for them. Like she was making a pitch and that was her pitch. And you gotta remember too, Jack, like not everybody's like you where you didn't want to be a father and were, you know, resentful of your children the entirety of your time being a parent.
True, but if I had the $5 million, it'd been a lot easier. So, I mean, it put a smile on my face.
But, so yeah, I think that's the red herring. That's distracting us from, I think, the main thing out of here, which is what that asteroid was. It's obviously something at play. And
you don't think there's a connection between that baby and the babies we see later on?
No. I don't know if I'm ready to jump those two things together.
I don't think those are babies, first of all. You're talking about the things that Adrian made?
Are you broke? I couldn't hear you. Broke up.
Okay, so you're saying I don't think those babies that he put in the human microwave or whatever would probably classify as actual babies. They're obviously separate, like clone things. I don't think they're connected.
He says he didn't create them.
True, but I
wow, Jay, it's like all life is precious, man.
I like going fishing
for babies.
Okay, it has to be one of the weirdest scenes of this whole episode, though, right? Especially an episode with like eggs everywhere.
Yes.
Like it starts with eggs. We also see Angela like scrambling up some eggs, like
baby eggs. I mean, baby. It just.
But I, you know, Jack, I do think there is a connection there, in that you know. Lady True seems to be a follower, admirer of Adrian Veidt. And, you know, she's obviously made advances in genetic sciences. So maybe she did, set up those things. But I don't think those things that he made are fully human.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that is there a connection? Is there some kind of connection there?
I think there absolutely is. I think, you know, it's very easy to say maybe she even like kind of banished or tricked Adrian to kind of banish himself to wherever this other dimension is. And it may be connected to, you know, whatever this big clock tower thing is. But that remains to be seen. But I think that we haven't really landed on everybody's theories on what that asteroid is. Or is that... is that Adrian coming back on from the other side?
So the whole timeline here is what I was trying to figure out with this meteor crash. Because it's mentioned while she's talking to Katie Clark there, where, you know, she mentions like, oh, you arrived a year ago and, you know, you're building this big clock. And she says that it's more than just a big clock. So it just kind of had me wonder, like, okay, was there time that passed from this meteor crash, or did this meteor crash happen in real time? Because there's definitely some time distortions happening in all of these like little bits of story that we're getting.
Yeah, we don't know. Like, we don't know where Adrian's time is or timeline, and we don't know what that opening scene is, because it did not, to my knowledge, we don't see any other connection to the main story, which is really the main one with Angela and the hanging of Chief Judd, is all within a couple of days, right? So we don't know where this opening scene falls, to your point, Matt.
Yeah, because when they do the after the title, you kind of see time pass, and all of a sudden, like, I don't know. It almost seemed like there was an overlay of that place, you know, like, and I don't think that actually happened there, but maybe, you know, how would they have built that in that fast? I don't know. There's just something happening with the time and I can't wrap my mind around it.
You even had the hourglass. So
true. Yeah. The 3 minutes, in your time.
Well, Lady True obviously knew the meteor was coming at a certain time. That's why she had the hourglass.
And she knows how to broker a deal.
Yeah. I will just destroy the baby.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
I thought it was funny too.
Yeah.
Anyway. So my theory is HRP. Any other theories before we move on here? Because you guys haven't been biting on my offer.
It's not a bad theory, because we do see him launching Mr. Dead Phillips bodies into the thing, and he from the catapult.
Yep.
So that could be it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's the best theory that we've come up with so far.
Any others? Any other takers before we move on?
I'll be honest, I didn't think about it until you said it. And I'm like going, wow, Jay, I'd have been all in if it was Matt. But with Jay, I'm like, okay, I'm about 50%. But it's a good theory for you. I do like it. Maybe Colleen said it to you when you were watching.
She did not. No, she did not. Matt, any predictions before we move on?
No. I just don't think that he's in a sideways universe, though.
Okay, you don't.
Or maybe he is. Maybe he is.
You don't think he's lost? Really? Okay. All right.
I don't know. I mean, that's a good idea. Like, if it's like that time clock sends people into a wormhole. I've also kept thinking that perhaps Dr. Manhattan has him trapped in some type of a dimension bubble. So, yeah, I got nothing. So,
all right. Okay. Moving on. We're kind of catching up with Angela after her confrontation somewhat with Silk Spectre 2, Agent Blake. And she kind of she goes through covering up Will's, remnants in her space. And she accidentally burns that letter, which I was like, no.
Well, she did try to put it out.
I was kind of upset by that personally, but
really,
yeah, because I don't know, it just like it made it 100 years or whatever.
I'm sure there's that might have just been a copy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Maybe Will carries around the copy of it.
Uh-huh. I refer back to that book, Things Fall Apart. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. But then she finds out more about the family tree. She goes to the center and kind of gets to the backstory on Will, which we saw in the first couple episodes.
That's a cool family tree. I wish mine did that.
Yeah. It maybe 23andMe can develop a center like that one day.
I did.
But then it kind of brings us up to the end of last episode, where it is Angela's car that falls from the sky, and they kind of arrive together at the same time. So that's why I think there is a bit of time play here a little bit, because it kind of went back and now it's back to the same, where they're on
right.
the same page.
Yeah, and did we even get to Lube Guy?
No, Lube Guy's
a little bit later.
Okay, Lube Guy's later. Okay, yeah.
I said Silver Surfer, but then the Lube Guy is a better name.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the Red Scare called him, right? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking he was like a silverfish. But silverfish. Yeah.
For like cardboard and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. I also wanted to just mention that I really liked that moment where they had Angela talking to her grandfather Will, and they did the overlay of the masks, because we do get a conversation from Lori later on about masks and what they mean. So I really loved that overlay and that play of those two figures. And it was a real sweet and sour moment, because you think she's being nice and then she's like, screw you, man. Like,
yeah. She likes to drop. She would definitely say F you, Lori.
Yeah. And it's curious. I mean, I did love that scene in the car, and poor Petey's just getting
Petey's getting paid. Come on,
that's true. And
that's his job. But he just like you do kind of feel bad for him, though.
A little bit, just a little bit. But yeah, and so I do think there's something there in Angela's past. Whenever we get, do you think we'll ever get a flashback for her? Just like kind of explore that story, because we're just getting little bits and pieces of it. There's definitely trauma there, and that's why she wears the mask, as Agent Blake says. But yeah, any thoughts there?
Yeah, masks equal trauma, and then leads to justice. So I thought that was a really great breakdown of that. And I liked that we also got that PD is a critic of the show Minutemen.
Yes.
So
it's full of inaccuracies.
Yeah. So I like the self play of those kind of things, because, you know, with everything that we know Damon Lindelof had been through with Lost, and, you know, as Jack pointed out, the title, If You Don't Like My Own or My Story, Write Your Own. And then just that idea that you got a critic about a TV show within the show. So,
yes. He's exercising some demons, Lindelof, I would think.
You think he'd be all right, because Leftovers was so well done.
Yeah, but you know, you never forget. I mean, Jack, you're still bitter about things that happened decades and decades and decades ago, so.
Yeah, but I've never had any success. He has, so.
Maybe it's just a follically challenged person thing where you hold on to grudges a little bit longer than people.
That could be it. That could be it.
People like Matt and myself, where, you know, we still have our hair, so we don't stress about things.
Well. You got to go for the hair, don't you? It's just like you're needling him.
Yeah, just keep bragging. I'll take it back. I don't like your theory about the meteor.
You're kind of halfway in anyway, so let's just be.
Yeah, but now I'm 100% against it. In fact, if it is true, you probably just read it off the internet.
I didn't. I didn't even have to. I have time to get on the internet just to load up GarageBand and listen to you curse Skype.
F you, Skype.
F you, Skype. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just was going to say chronologically, like we're kind of talking about the whole moment with her grandfather, but then she comes home, she crashes in Topher's bedroom, and we don't really understand time-wise like what's going on, but I like how they, like, story-wise, and you're right, Jay, like this episode was more about character building and setting things up. We had kind of a big showcase moment, I think, in the last episode with the bomb and that action piece, but we're seeing it's a little bit more real world here, where we're seeing the ramifications that would traumatize any kids. So I think that's why we see Emma and Rosie with Cal, but then Topher's in his bedroom trying to convince himself that he didn't see that, and we get that sweet moment where Topher's offering her the stuffed monster. So I don't know, it's just a nice, like, I think it just brings the trauma a little bit more, like, to the forefront. Like, yeah, this is what these characters just went through. Like, so I don't know. Nice that the writers are at least keeping that thread going. And even though we are jumping around with a lot of different stories here. So,
yeah, no, I think it's a great call out and again, a good character development moment for sure. So Agent Blake here, Lori Blake, how much do you think she knows what's going on? Because I love her approach. I love her sarcasm. And, you know, it seems to me that she's, you know, humoring Angela a lot. And maybe she sees a bit of herself in Angela, too. But do you think Angela really knows what's going on? And she's just kind of like playing the part of, oh, really? Is that what happened? But what's your vibe here on her in this episode?
I think she definitely knows what's going on.
Why is that? Why is that, Jack?
I'm sorry, it broke up.
It's okay. Just why is that?
Because she does. I mean, we're talking about Lori, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knows. She says all the right things. I mean, she's not just fishing for answers. She's giving correct. She's saying what is actually happened, right?
So then what's her angle here?
To let Angela know that she knows what's going on.
But why is she... What's her long play then, right? Because Angela has her motivation. She's trying to figure out what the hell is going on. This person that she trusted isn't who she thought he was. And now her great-grandfather has popped into the picture. And, you know, where she seemingly have control over her life is in chaos, and she's trying to bring order.
Maybe in a roundabout way, she's trying to get Angela on her side to work with her.
What side is she getting on? Because that's I love Lori Blake's character here, but it's just like I know where Angela's going. Adrian Veidt is trying to get out of whatever kind of prison he's in. Lady True seems to be up to some larger plan, seemingly part of maybe possibly what the 7th Cavalry is doing because of the end of the episode with the tick-tock with Will Reeves, whatever's happening in 3 days, possibly against Dr. Manhattan, and we still have whatever Dr. Manhattan's play is. What is Laurie's Blake purpose in all of this? And is she playing the part of the Rorschach or the comedian, or is it a bit of everything? I'm curious to see, you know, someone as astute and smart and experienced as her, you know, what is going to be her main purpose to this season?
Well, that's a great question to kind of think about, like what her motivation is, because she does seem to have a chip on her shoulder, you know, mm-hmm. and yet she's working for the FBI to kind of uncover and get to the truth of the matter. And, you know, there's definitely like an aspect where she knows Angela is lying.
Right. Definitely.
So, but I also kind of think that it's interesting with the introduction of True. Is that her longer play? Is she interested in what True is doing? Like, is she trying to get closer and into the inside of that? Because she's wanting the manifest. I mean, obviously she's trying to solve this mystery as to what happened to Will and you know, this vehicle. But to me, I was starting to connect the dots there. And if they did drop it intentionally on her, are they listening to these Dr. Manhattan things? I mean, we talked about this in the last podcast, is like, does Dr. Manhattan really listen to these, or is the government intercepting them? And then now a bigger question, are they intercepting them? Are they actually hearing these things? And they were the ones that were messing with her.
Maybe it's a senator, right?
Senator Keene.
Yeah, maybe he's got to be more involved. So maybe that is what you're saying. Maybe he is listening to him and he knows more about what's going on.
Well, they have the machines and capability to drop these things. So that's where I was kind of like, okay, like, you know, maybe True, Lady True is the one that like ordered this drop so that they could spook her or make her believe.
She's working for, Lady True could be working for someone else.
True. interesting note about True's daughter. What was that? What was her name? Bion. I looked up that name and it means secretive. Mm. So.
Well, and there is something there, right? Where is it just a clone of Lady True? That's what I'm feeling.
I think so.
Because, I mean, because what she's describing is what Vietnam, basically, right?
Like, yeah.
And she wasn't very motherly either. She's, you know, she goes, "Can you walk me back to my bed?" No. Back to her room, she goes, "No."
Right.
I was a little cold.
Yeah, and that's where I think she wanted her to feel that pain of the walking. So she must be having her, like, implant her memories in her while she sleeps. And that would be my thought there.
I would agree with that.
To kind of like, when she's talking about legacy, her legacy is like, you know, it's that one thing that rich people want to solve all the time is how to live forever. Like, life's so dope, I want to live forever.
I think poor people want to do that too. I mean, it's kind of universal.
But I'm saying rich people can afford it, you know.
Oh, okay.
Well, most normal are like, gotta end it eventually.
I mean, they talked about it like the first wonder of the new world. So, you know, there was that mention of these 7 wonders of the world and how she was building a new one. So, there's definitely some legacy aspects happening there. And we forgot to mention, she's not just a billionaire. She's a trillionaire.
Yeah.
So
5 million was nothing to her.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you're a trillionaire. And being one, being a billionaire is like impossible to fathom just in terms of the amount of money that is, but a trillionaire, like, it's just not even, it's not even a
feasible
thing.
The taxes,
of course you would go there, Jack, but anyway, moving on. But I guess Lori Blake, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with her.
I think, like I said, I think she's, Angela's smart, but she's smarter. Lori's smarter than her.
We got a little more into Looking Glass because,
Mary, yeah, we saw his bomb shelter.
Yes, his bomb shelter. So,
yes,
he's, again, pretty fascinating dude. But you know, she enlists his help to find out what's up with Will's pills, which are still in the car, and also keep Mr. Jed's Ku Klux Klan, or possibly his grandfather's Klan.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's crazy that Looking Glass knew that that was old school. And he has an ex-girlfriend. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, who knew that?
Yeah.
Well, clearly, he was normal once upon a time. We don't know. Trauma, possibly. Right? He's wearing a mask. There's past trauma.
Yeah, and are we getting like a very heavy Rorschach vibe from Looking Glass?
Yes, I have from the beginning, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. He doesn't seem as mentally unstable and, you know, awful as Rorschach is, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had a girlfriend for a period of time. Rorschach probably has never had a girlfriend, so. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why he's so uptight.
And I assume that Sister Knight dumped the wheelchair.
Well, that's what she did. That's when Lube Guy saw her dumping the wheelchair. It was chopped up in that duffel bag. And then she chases him, and then he like lubes up, and then he slides into the thing. So what is this scene? It's kind of out of left field. Is this going to come back to whatever, or is this just to say like Tulsa's losing its grip on the authority because more vigilantes are showing up?
Yeah, it reminded me of the Mothman people that were just flying around like videotaping stuff. Like it seemed like this person was clearly spying on her. So. I actually initially was like, oh, is Lori spying on her? But I don't think that this Lube guy has anything to do with Lori.
My thing is, you go into this, if you've ever seen one of the, you know, sewer drain things there, it's like only like 3 feet deep. I mean, you know, as you slide in, I mean, it goes down. But how did he slide? Did he just slide in and turn himself down? I mean, I was a little confused on that. It seems to me he's a pretty tall guy. He just would have hit the edge of the, his feet would have hit the wall of the.
Well, I'm sure he, well, you would just go down, like bend your, like put your legs down immediately and then just kind of slide down.
But that takes a lot of athletic ability.
Yeah. Maybe he is. He was running really fast and maybe he's okay.
Right.
Double jointed throughout his body. You never know. Okay. That's a superpower. That's a superpower.
I mean, how does Pennywise get down there? Right.
Yeah, exactly. So. You'll float too. Lori Blake's investigations lead to Lady True's clock tower, which it looks a lot like Dr. Manhattan's clock that he made on Mars. So it seems, you know, she is connected or possibly obsessed with Dr. Manhattan just as much as Adrian Veidt is. But, you know, they have these hovercraft things that you know, possibly picked up that car. And we find out later that, you know, Will's in cahoots with Reeve, Lady True anyway. But, yeah, any other things here for Lady True? So she bought land to get this meteorite. She has a clone of herself that she's probably implanting memories into. And she's partnering with Will Reeves for something in 3 days. Didn't get too much for her. A lot of mystery still there. She's from Vietnam. Any thoughts or theories here on Lady True overall in this story of the episode?
I don't know, but I'm going back to something about the meteor. She buys the land. I mean, it hit far enough away. Would the Clarks have heard it hit?
Yes, but she would want ownership or whatever that thing that was landing there. So that's.
But she could easily go get it without them even knowing it.
Yeah, but then they could sue, saying you stole that from their property.
How would they even know it was there?
Why risk it when you're a trillionaire that can just buy the land?
But I'm just saying, is there something that when it hit, it did something to the land?
That made it
valuable? Is there something that that when it hit, it does something that she needs the land? Because she said, I need the 40 acres, not just the house.
I think she just knew that it was going to hit somewhere. So she's saying like,
well, I know that, but again, it hits out in the middle of nowhere. Who knows? I mean, who's going to know that it hit?
She's a legal lady. I mean, she wants it by the book, apparently.
She's true. But I don't know. I think maybe she wanted the land because maybe that meteor did something to the land that she needs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to, ruin Jay's theory.
Okay.
So, but no, I was just thinking, I go, why would you need? Okay.
Seemed pretty simple.
I know you're a trillionaire, and 5 million is nothing, but still.
Yeah, 5 million is like literally like change in her couch.
maybe that's what it was—a couch.
But yeah, I wonder. You know, I have a feeling that it seems that they're aligned with possibly 7th Cavalry, because with the whole tick-tock thing at the end. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's going to be a showdown between Dr. Manhattan and all of these people, because that's the vibe I'm getting from all of this in terms of what they're trying to set up.
I have no idea what they're trying to set up. I have none. I'm like basically like the Van Gogh puzzle. It's like I see the border, but the center is still incomplete. So,
I mean, and that's fair. It's just to me, you know, if there is echoes or connections to the original, you know, there's this reason for all of these pieces to kind of fall into place and to set a chain of events in motion. And I wonder what they are. And if there is this cult, or to me, like even when I read The Watchmen, I was like, okay, well, you know, Ozymandias was able to pull it off. He saved humanity from, you know, killing or, you know, basically driving themselves to extinction. But that last page, I think, is where Rorschach's journal, you know, goes into that newspaper office. And then that to me was just like, okay, what is the fallout from that journal? And to me, it seems, or if I would make a sequel to The Watchmen, it would be that fallout, or what is the response for the cover-up that led to this giant squid event. And that's to me where 7th Cavalry is trying to get to that place, even though they've, you know, taken a lot of other bad aspects of what Rorschach's mind had, and possibly Lady True here. And then Ozymandias is trying to get back into the game, and then maybe this is a pushback against Dr. Manhattan, who's like this omnipotent god now on Mars. So that would be kind of my angle, maybe where this is all trying to go to, is maybe, you know, showing the truth and kind of flipping back whatever wrongs possibly were done at the end of the Watchmen comic.
Have either of you listened to the official Watchmen podcast, by the way?
I have not.
Okay. That's all right. I mean, I did ask you guys to, but whatever.
Did they answer this? Am I just saying something? That
doesn't no, matter? No. There's something that they
I did listen to that. Go ahead.
Well, there's something that he brings up about the idea of, you know, the first Watchmen dealing with you know, nuclear holocaust and destruction, and then where he wanted to take it with race, you know, and obviously that's like a big theme that is throughout the season. So I just thought it was interesting that he brought that up, and how that is a backbone structure to perhaps one of the topical issues that he's wanting to deal with. How do you handle something like race, you know? And you know, is there really a doomsday clock that can solve that, you know, or is this doomsday clock something completely different altogether that we just don't see yet? So anyway, it was just, there's some really good stuff in there. So, and for those that haven't checked it out yet, I would definitely it's worth a listen, hearing Damon Lindelof kind of talk about. Basically, they kind of talk about the first three episodes and some of the themes that go into creating this season, and also talk about masks. So, anyway, back to this podcast, though. I wanted to mention, you know, Jay, you bring up these connections, though, and how these threads are coming together. One thread that never came together and connected in Watchmen was the Black Freighter. I mean, it's in the background, kind of like how we have the Minuteman show in this. However, Veidt's story also reminds me of the Black Freighter, specifically with the end of his storyline in here, where he's talking to his workers and he's kind of using them as the dead bodies that are used in the Black Freighter to get as a vessel to get off of the island that he's in. Mm-hmm. So islands in the stream. Maybe he is this island in the
streams.
Dead bodies all around. So, but yeah, I mean, he's using their bodies as a way to get out of wherever he is. So, and I didn't mention it last week, but the cake had three candles on it, and it was clear that he had four candles on it this week. And he even mentions that he's been there for 4 years. So yeah. Clearly his story has been taking place in a whole other timeline. So, anyway, just
good catch, Matt.
And well, I should have mentioned it last week, but.
And then are we to assume that, you know, if he does get out of this prison, that timeline will then match up with the events that are happening in Tulsa?
Yeah, maybe. And what if he came back a younger fight? I mean, there was a mention about him being old, yep. You know, like.
Because the statue that Lady True has is almost kind of an image of what we saw in the last episode when he kind of donned the Ozymandias costume.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Respect your elders is what that means. I'm sure Jack liked that one.
That was my favorite, yes.
Even though
Expect your hair challenge, elders.
Well, that's what I'm saying. At least Jeremy Irons, he's older than you, Jack, has a very nice head of hair.
Yeah, he does. He does. We don't know if it's real.
He listens to reggae just like you do, Jack.
All the time. When I'm fishing out babies in the water, yeah. Always.
It's he wasn't listening to it while he was fishing babies.
That's how I do it.
He had like an old lobster crate for that, which is, oh my gosh, that whole scene was so weird. It was so.
Well, this one's got to throw this one back. It's like, oh.
Because it was a fully formed, like it didn't have its arms yet or whatever. So
yeah, so gross.
it was a different scene that we've. It's probably a different scene that I've ever seen in a television show.
I mean, we kind of already hit it on a little bit, but Will Reeves, he can walk. It's pretty easy to explain those type of things though when you're hanging with Lady True, who obviously has kind of mastered the art of like genetics and all that kind of stuff, where, you know, has a 104-year-old lift somebody up over his head and walk and all that kind of stuff.
Well, if he's not walking like he's 104,
right? And so if he's getting whatever type of gene therapy that she could probably give, is probably how that's happening, right?
Yeah, count me in.
It's not like Locke, where he's in a plane crash and all of a sudden now he can walk. That doesn't make sense. How do you explain that? This one seems pretty easy to explain scientifically.
I think so, yeah.
Based on what Lady True's been able to do.
Stem cells from those fetus babies. So.
Yeah, right?
Would have been better, though, when he stood up if he had like an orange in his mouth. Kind of smiled. No. No. that wouldn't have worked?
Two on the head.
A little bit. All right. Well, anything else we want to talk about this episode? I mean, I know there's probably some smaller things we didn't dig into, but any other big things before we get into listener feedback?
I think that's it.
I would just say that time is on our side here. So,
I'm not gonna laugh at that one.
I thought it was good.
That was a good charity laugh, Jake.
Oh, come on, it's how it ended the episode.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
We get tick tock, 3 days, and then time is on our is on my side. Irma Thompson, 1964 version there. So,
well, way to look it up.
Wow, look at that.
Thanks.
Well, unless you're Nick, then you just know it. So,
no, okay, Nick just thinks he knows it. He doesn't actually know it.
You know. When you guys were watching Game of Thrones and you saw that nudity symbol, you were like, okay, we're getting some nudity in this one. Except with Watchmen, you're like, whoa, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Recreated, like, not really human nudity?
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Anyway. Okay. Moving on. We have some listener feedback. Before we get into that, we want to take a quick commercial break. Here we go.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. We've got some emails and phone calls to get into.
Wow.
I know. It's a big day.
It's a big day in the neighborhood.
First up, let's do the emails. We got one from David Gott. This is about episode 3.
He's always behind.
Yeah, he just sent this like a day ago too, so it's not like he just missed the cutoff. No, he's like a whole week. Anyway, this episode really turned a corner for me. While I did enjoy the first two episodes, but they lacked the highly stylized storytelling that was so prevalent in the original comics. That changed this week. The use of Laurie's joke to frame the story felt like it came right out of the comics. I think I may be beginning to see some interesting plot directions. The original story began with the death of the comedian, followed by the discovery of a hidden portion of his closet. Similarly, Judd was killed and a secret apartment found. The original story more or less centered upon why the comedian was killed. Is the new story focused on why Judd was murdered? It seems so. In the original, the comedian was killed because he knew the truth of what Adrian was up to. Was Judd killed for a similar reason? Is the clan outfit a misdirect? Was Judd, like Eddie, a deeply flawed person killed for the worst reason? I'm not totally sold on the idea that Judd was somehow in league with the 7th Cavalry. I suspect the 7th Cavalry is being manipulated by some third party, Vite, who's using their hate to achieve some other yet unknown goal. Laurie seems to embrace her heritage, emphasized by her taking the last name Blake. The use of her telling a joke to John seems to further emphasize the point. But the comedian never told jokes. Who told a joke in the original? Rorschach. When Laurie finished her joke, she says, "Roll on snare drum, curtains, good joke." When Rorschach finished his clown joke in the original, he says, "Good joke, everybody laugh, roll on snare drum, curtains." The callback in the new series is obvious. What that means to me is that Damon is telling us Laurie is the person in the story who sees the bigger picture as investigating it as Rorschach did in the original. What is Laurie's true motivation? Is she truly committed to stopping mass heroes? Is she trying to find /save/liberate Dan? The presence of the owl seems to indicate that she has not left him emotionally. Anyways, just some ideas. Great podcast, Gott.
Good email, Gott.
Yeah, I like the, you know, Jay had mentioned the whole, you know, what is Laurie's motivation? So, yeah, the owl and saving him might be a longer, you know, goal for her. So yeah. beyond just asking or answering the why this police officer was killed, because I think if she was possibly
nice. All right, anything else? No, let's go on to the next email. It's a short one from Ethan. Hi. Back to the Future Part 2 microwave pizza babies, have a good week. That's it.
I like that. Pizza babies.
Yeah, I like pizza that. It's good. All right, okay, that was good.
We have a couple phone calls to get into, so let's do those now. Clicking on the button, taking a second. Here we go.
Hey, fellas. This is Ralph calling from Anaheim. Been watching Watchmen, and I've been catching up on your program. In podcast number 2, you get a call from Jared suggesting that Ozymandias is living in an alternate universe. I disagree. He's not on Earth because we saw the newspaper that declared he was dead. But I believe Jay mentioned that he is living in the castle that Dr. Manhattan built on Mars. And I believe, based on episode 3 with Ozymandias using Philip to try to escape the atmosphere, I believe that Dr. Manhattan is the groundskeeper that is watching over Ozymandias on Mars. So I believe he is on Mars after the events of the comics where Ozymandias unleashed the squid. Dr. Manhattan then took him and is holding him prisoner on Mars. So I think Dr. Manhattan and Ozymandias are at odds with each other on Mars. So that's my theory. I guess I should go listen to episode 3 because this might have been discussed already. Anyway, listen to my podcast, go to my Patreon, and yeah, talk to you guys soon. Bye.
You can find Ralph at Casino Skunk. I like the theory. I do.
I think I never even thought about him being on Mars. Did we ever talk about that?
Yeah, we said it could be Mars.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? Did we say that, Matt? Or it's been talked about?
I don't know. I just thought it was like just right there. It was just like so obvious. No, I'm just joking, Ralph. I don't know. But I think we did talk about the idea that Dr. Manhattan might be imprisoning him.
Yeah.
We talked about that, but I don't remember saying.
But I mean,
make sense though, because if it is a meteor, right?
Yeah, but how would he like get it on a catapult and then slingshot off of Mars?
Well, that's just how you got to get in the right trajectory,
or
right?
Or unless Dr. Manhattan has made like a wormhole, and then that just kind of takes you to.
Because I know that's how they talked about doing that with years ago with going to Mars, that you'd have some kind of slingshot that would sling you to Mars. So maybe that's
usually the other planets.
Yeah.
So like correct. using the moon to slingshot someone. To...
Yeah. So maybe that's something that they're, I don't know.
All right.
I'm just throwing it out there because I don't
clearly.
Know.
Let's go to this next phone call. Here we go.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Matt. Love the Watchmen podcast. I actually was a listener of you guys way back in the lost days. So I want to thank you for continuing on with all the goodness. A couple things. Number one, the audio levels on Jay's mic are just all over the place. So it makes it a little challenging to listen to because you jack the volume up to hear him, and then the rest of the volume is, like, super loud. So I don't know if you guys have hand that out by the third episode or not, but I'm on a couple
fingers
of
crossed
it's wreaking a little bit of havoc on the car speakers and the goodies. So I wanted to give you that. And thank you, feedback. Hey, love the show. Love the fact you added Matt in there for another perspective, and the fact you guys are doing it right after the show, so there's no other influences or thoughts or anything like that. So, hey, thanks again for your time and effort. Enjoy the show, and look forward to hearing the next one. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for the call, and hopefully, yeah, I've turned up the mic a little bit this episode, and hopefully that means it's good. I don't know.
So you're low?
I guess.
I guess. That's never been said before.
I know.
That big mouth.
Well, I hope we get more pizza babies next episode.
I agree.
I keep imagining Muppet Babies theme song, except with pizza babies. Sorry, it's just Ethan's email threw me. So, but thank you, listener, for including me and on your compliment.
Oh man! All right.
Well, maybe that was Matt.
Maybe it was. Maybe
no. They didn't give a name, did they?
No, they did not.
Okay.
Anyway, all right, that will do it for this week's Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt. Give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Calling time.
Also, send an email to watchmenjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JNJackGroup. use our Amazon link, janejack.com/Amazon. It'll look just like the normal Amazon you know and love, but a small percentage of those sales will go to the Jane Jack production fold. This podcast is listener supported, and if you'd like to become a listener supporter, go to patreon.com/JaneJack, patreon.com/JaneJack. Want to especially thank Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with the Plan, Drake the Destroyer, and Ed the Creepy Letter Carrier. Thank you so much, and thank you to all of our patrons. You can find a full list on our website at janejack.com. Check out the other podcasts on our network, janejack.com/iTunes, or just simply janejack.com. Right now, we're doing episodes about Dancing with the Stars, Ramblecast After Dark, The Broadcast, this one, Watchmen with Jay, Jack, and Matt, and this week, Disney Plus goes live on Tuesday, and that means the first episode of The Mandalorian will also go live, and Matt, who hosts Owen and Brew's Barbecue, along with Chris in Boston and Nick, that guy, will be doing a podcast about it this season.
And they may have a special guest this week.
And I know Matt is trying to get some good guests. He obviously couldn't this week, so he had to go to some backups.
You forgot to mention Survivor.
Oh, that's right, Survivor, too. But Mandalorian's a big premiere this week. So, Matt, are you excited to be podcasting about it?
Really excited to podcast about it. Probably even more excited to watch it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm with you.
Not that I'm the guest they're talking about, but I did sign up for Apple TV today. Or not Apple TV, Disney Plus. So nope. Not that I'm going to be a guest, but that just
nope, no pressure. So.
Yeah, and Matt, may God have mercy on your soul.
Thanks. great show, guys. This was one egg in a trillionaire.
Hey, there you go. That works.
Okay.
Oh, man. Bye, guys. Hasta luego and goodbye.
On that great joke, I'm out.